ओके ओके हेलो एवरीवन, वेलकम टू द सेवेंथ एपिसोड ऑफ फाइंडिंग तुरिया। टुडे आई हैव अ न्यू गेस्ट विद मी, अंजना। शी इज समवन हु इज अकंपनीड मी ऑन माय जर्नी इन स्किज़ोफ्रेनिया फॉर अ लॉन्ग टाइम नाउ, एंड शी इज गिवन मी अ लॉट ऑफ इनसाइट्स। आई ओ अ लॉट टू हर टू हेल्प मी अंडरस्टैंड एस्ट्रोलॉजिकली हाउ स्किज़ोफ्रेनिया कैन वर्क। Those are thoughts I will elaborate later. But right now, I'd love you all to welcome Anjana as well. And she's someone who's got a great perspective on different issues which affect mental health. And she's got a perspective of how... astrology conventionally, astrology, palmistry and all are considered to be the occult sciences, right? I mean, occult is a strange word to use, but that's the way it has been. And that is something which Anjana would like to know more about. We will carry on this session with a dialogue between both of us on both of our areas and see how mental health processes as well as these sciences can integrate better with each other. Without further ado, I introduce to you, all of you to Anjana.
Hi everyone, Anjana here. Anirudh, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. The honor is mine, and you know, you said that I have offered you insight, but you've actually offered me the most insight over the last, you know, 2 years. So I'm excited for you and the fact that, you know, all your listeners get to hear all your perspectives. So thanks for having me on your podcast. So I thought maybe it might be nice to begin with why you got interested in the occult sciences in the first place, because like you were saying, it's a word that maybe not a lot of people know about or use, but it is a really fascinating word, especially because, as you know, as we'll soon discuss, a lot of the sort of deeper questions about who we are, why we do the things we do, why we see the things we see, can be answered through both maybe the occult sciences, but also maybe more quote unquote standard approaches like psychology or psychoanalysis or something like that. So yeah, why don't you begin by telling us maybe why you got interested in the occult sciences in the first place?
I think the first sign of occult sciences is in my name, the spelling of my name, A-N-E-R-U-D-H, N, Anirudh N, which adds up to 33 if you use a certain numerological method. And my mother's wish was so that, you know, Kubera's wealth is considered to be 33. And so my mom wanted me to have a comfortable life. Okay. And I guess that's where it started. But on a more serious note, there's something, it's all about making sense of patterns around you, right? We all look for patterns. We all look for meaning and coherence. I mean, the word coherence or even what is the essence of things? These are different questions. People approach it in a different manner. And somewhere along the line, I was exposed to this, the patterns of numbers which would recur in my life, like say 4 or 5. So I'm 23rd January 1988 born. Okay. And if you add 2 and 3 makes 5. And if you add all the digits of my name also, birth date also, it comes to 32, and 3 and 2 makes 5 again. Okay. So, and it is noticing all these patterns, like your roll number is 5. You do well something related to 5 when you sit on a 5. Very pretty crazy, but yeah, these are the patterns I started observing. And I want to understand, is there truth in this pattern, or why do these patterns occur? Is it a coincidence? What is it? So that was the first step. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I mean, I think maybe to your point, these patterns and these numbers are kind of everywhere around us, but not everyone might notice them, because I don't think I've ever added up my name or noticed numbers in that sort of way. So it's interesting that maybe even before you knew what it was, something was drawing you to it. And do the numbers give you any sense of comfort, or what do you think they provide you with?
They used to give me a sense of destiny. Okay. I think that, you know, something, you know, this is meant for you. Okay. All comes together in this, something like that. I think a sense of destiny. Okay. That was my youngest impression, but, yeah. And this pretty much went on till high school. I mean, I remember my 12th standard board marks, my 12th standard board exam roll number, okay, and trying to figure out what patterns it got into. So it was there. And see, in India, right, these things still have a lot of resonance. I don't know how it is in the West, but people, for example, even though faith in astrology is a lot more in India, okay, how blind it is and whether that's a different topic to take up altogether. But the belief in these occult sciences is a lot more. I mean, I think we have to make draw a line about faith, the occult sciences, psychology, our inner feelings. All of these can be very strongly linked, right? Now, what is an occult in itself? Okay, these patterns. I think anything which is hidden, right, Anjana, fundamentally could be called the occult. Okay. The word occult typically means more like magic or something which comes out of thin air, right? But on a deeper sense, so psychology, the words you might use are subconscious. I would say, are these numerological patterns, nature, subconscious, and our subconscious together? How integrated are we with nature? Are we distinct or are we integrated with nature? Okay, what are we? Are we truly distinct from nature or is that an assumption in our head?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think if we were to look at it, I mean, you know more about the real sciences than me, but obviously matter, we're all made from matter, right? So that is maybe a linkage between us and nature, and you know how consciousness is born is, you know, obviously a whole nother question. But I was really interested in your notion of destiny and how maybe the numbers provided you a sense of destiny, and maybe to some degree, do you feel like that's what we're all looking for, a sense of having control over what life may bring us, or having kind of the tools that we could use to figure out if what life has in store for us. Do you think that's...
Should we look to control? I guess that's a question to ask, right? Should we try to control life? Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
I think the answers would vary with the person. Okay. Each of us, some of us have, I mean, for everybody, certain aspects are a struggle. Okay. Certain aspects come easily and spontaneously.
Okay? Yeah.
And certain aspects are, you know, give you pleasure. You work towards the pleasure. Certain, it's like different people and wavelengths, right? You get this. Some people, you just gel with them, right? That's a wavelength sync and it happens. Okay,
yeah.
So if I were to take it in a slightly, I'm bringing in an astrological flavor or a philosophical flavor here, I'm saying dharma, artha, kama, moksha, or these are all put the purusharthas, as they're called. Dharma is, you know, your state of being. Artha is what you strive for. Kama is what you interact and the pleasures you experience or flow, etc. And finally, moksha is how you make sense of the world. Okay. So Anjana, different things would, see, for you, since you're thinking from a more controlled perspective, it shows that you're driven to achieve something specifically. Okay. right.
Yeah.
So that drive to achieve is what is shaping you in that way. For example, for me, destiny was more like a very spontaneous thing I could resonate with, or it made sense to me. Okay. Since you asked me my idea of destiny, in my earlier years, particularly, I was looking for something naturally I would resonate with, or doing something which came naturally to me. Now I understand the value of strife, of difficulties, etc. I mean, I've explored more of the purusharthas, if you will, by now. I mean, being older. So I now I understand that it can come in different ways, Anjana. I mean, what is destiny could be something when you might feel it at the highest moment when you know you achieved something, right? For you, it might come out in that sense. Okay, when you strive and the goal, you finally strived and, you know, you've achieved the goal. And a lot of people, it does, right? And we are in an age where striving for goals is considered very much part of our norms and of our behavior, of our work culture, right? Striving towards your goals. It's good, but we should make sure we balance it with other facets of our life.
Absolutely. So you're saying that, you know, in your understanding of destiny, there's kind of multiple types of destiny. One is maybe the fact that you live up to something that you, and so once you achieve that, or once you have that, there's a feeling that, you know, I was always supposed to do this, or this is what I'm, and then you're also saying there's something that's more spontaneous about destiny.
Yeah, definitely. Destiny can be spontaneous as well. I think it depends on how you look at it. What are you, Anjana? What is an Anjana? Okay, very crazy question, but what is an Anjana?
You're asking me, what is an Anjana?
Yeah, because then you asking me, then it, let's see what the answer says, right? I mean, and these are things which you identified with the most. But
totally,
what is your true identity? What are you?
What am I? Well, I think for me, I feel like I'm in flux. Like I'm somebody who's in flux. That's what I can think of when I think about what am I.
Then that's good to be, right? And if you're flowing around and if you feel the state of flow, don't you think that's a destiny in itself?
What do you mean by that?
The fact that you're able to flow, right? Okay. The fact that you're changing and you're aware of the change, okay? And your awareness is in the change, okay? That itself is a positive statement for you, right? It feels very positive for you to be in the flux. Sometimes the flux, if the flux gets stalled, then maybe you might feel more negative. But if the flux is going, you still feel identified and you like this. You identify with the state of flow, right?
Definitely, yeah.
And that itself is, you know, maybe you're destined to flow. Okay. But if it goes out of balance, then you'll have to notice, is there another aspect of my life that I'm ignoring?
That's true. But how does one, do you feel like, okay, so now we have the next thing that I would be interested in is, so to recognize that something is out of balance,
okay,
what modalities can we turn to? Because in obviously in the West, we may turn to psychology or psychotherapeutics,
right,
or psychoanalysis as a way to make sense of what's out of balance. And maybe in other places in the world, we may turn to spirituality or astrology or, you know, the occult sciences. So how, or of course, that's quite a generalization, because in the West also we have, there's a lot of spiritual mediums, and obviously in India, for example, there's so many different psychotherapeutic approaches. But I mean, I guess, how do you, I mean, from your own interest and your own experience, how do we then identify what is off balance, or where do you think we can turn to?
Okay. Many levels, Anjana. You're right. I mean, there are so many approaches. Okay. You're right. Let's go to the Gita, right? Bhagavad Gita's got this good idea of three frameworks, right? It talks about 3-4 paths. It's a more spiritual way of looking at it, but the spirit has a lot of logic and a lot of purpose behind it. So we have this Karma Marga, Jnana Marga, and the Bhakti Marga, right? Okay. Karma Marga is where you strive to do, and you get detached from the fruits of your effort, and you offer everything to something higher than you. It doesn't have to be God or Krishna. It could be a God or Krishna take a more personal form. It could be an impersonal awareness. But if you're able to do it in the spirit of service and offer everything you have to the higher power, you're grateful to the higher power for having given you this existence and the opportunity to do whatever you can. Okay. It's a sense of gratitude and positivity towards all of your efforts. Okay. Towards a higher power, towards whatever you are and whatever you've been blessed and given with. Okay, that would be the Karma Marga. Okay, then you could argue that the Jnana Marga is a lot of things, right? So the Jnana Marga, in a very traditional Indian spiritual sense, is studying the scriptures, making sense of it, and attaining the absolute state. So let's take it to the slightly lower level for normal human beings. It could be like psychology, psychotherapy, counseling, even astrological counseling. We'll come to astrology. It has got two shades to it. But astrology as can be used for jnana also by being more self-aware. Okay. And you had a session of mine, right? So that's more of self-awareness is the highlight of what I focus on. Okay.
Right.
So all of this, I would put it in the jnana marga, where awareness of yourself gives you that sense that, you know, this is what has gone out of balance and how it should come back. Finally, we have the bhakti marga, where you just surrender to the God, a personal, impersonal power, however you want to. You surrender your feelings. It's a complete emotional release, right? All your burdens are taken care of by God. Once you've done that, okay, you're just living for God's sake. Okay, and astrology again comes in is if you do the rituals or the parihara, I mean the rituals or the prayaschit parihara, the Sanskrit words. I'm trying to think of any, repentance is a very odd word to use actually. But yeah, you could say that somewhere where you're expatiating your sin or what papa or some negative energy, let's put it as neutral as possible, some negative energy which has afflicted you, to expatiate that, you pray to the gods, especially the astrological gods, so that the negative influences go away. Okay. And the bhakti, anything done with bhakti, right, and a sense of offering, immediately leads to tranquility. And if you're truly able to be in that spirit of surrender, then yeah, astrology may also could help in the conventional sense. Okay. So you were talking of many paths which people take across the world. I thought this is a decent framework in which the paths can be categorized. We have different frameworks like yoga, hatha yoga, raja yoga, etc., where it is all about controlling your inner energy. Okay. A bhakti marga also could be something of a guru. I mean, India is like the land of gurus, right? Relatively. Okay. And even if not God, at least to the living work of a guru or the living presence of a guru, if you're able to identify or you're able to offer yourself to the person, to the guru, him or her. Okay. That sense of surrender itself is believed to release you emotionally.
Right, right. Okay. That's really interesting. I guess, you know, maybe in a more unnuanced, like maybe Western uneducated perception of something like surrender and prayer is that it would just, again, be reduced to some sort of path or some sort of tool or technique. Mm. But what you're saying is that it's in a category that's different from just a regular tool or technique.
Definitely. I think maybe, see, like in counseling, you tend to use cognitive behavior therapy, more rational approaches, right? But Anjana, for example, you've dealt with a variety of schizophrenic patients. Would you say rationality worked better or emotion or the fact that another person cared for them meant more? The fact of them emotionally being happy or satisfied, wasn't that a greater source of joy and security rather than, you know, rationally analyzing?
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
We are emotional people. Maybe one critique you could have of the best is maybe they've ignored emotion too much. I think we and family, emotion, earth, roots. Maybe India is a little too far emotional at times, but maybe that is a little that the balance has moved too much away from emotion, your roots, a sense of identity out of emotion, a sense of drawing on an ideal to live for, an ideal to work towards. We are pretty materialistic, pretty rational, but what about the role for ideal and emotion?
Yeah, that's really interesting because I think a lot of the things that are coming out maybe from the West, again, such a broad category, and what is the West in the first place? But I think the question of management, right? That's really where a lot of these things boil down to, right? So like, how do you manage schizophrenia, or how do you manage depression? It's like you said, maybe it's all versus, you know, really kind of curing or releasing or figuring out a way to lead life differently, like a third path, right? So maybe to your point, there is a sense in which, because if you think about it, everything is about management these days, right? It's about like pain management or managing your emotions or managing, it's not really about how do we find a new way of living that allows us to exist as we do and heal and move forward. So
I agree. There is good also in the sense, right now, life is moving at a very rapid pace for everybody, right? The sheer amount of information, communication, and all of our interactions are becoming a lot more transactional, okay? Because our interactions have become so complex, right? The thing is, the positive is now we're all getting together. There's a lot of newer combinations, newer things which are coming together all the time. But do we have, we also require a sense of security and stability, right? Are we losing that too much? Maybe, and that is what is causing all these emotional issues in the first place.
Okay. Having a sense of insecurity.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. And externalizing everything, right? It's like we are looking for quick fix solutions rather than staying the course. It's like we have to be active all the time. Okay, that's like the moral imperative of this age, you could argue, that we have to be active all the time. But is it necessarily so? I mean, anybody who's not looked on as being active is seen like a lazy person.
Okay. Completely.
You know, India, again, we have this other framework, Anjana, of sattva, rajas, and tamas. I don't know if you've come across this. But,
yes.
Sattva is all about the balance between activity and inactivity. Rajas is all about activity. Tamas is all about inactivity. And sattva is finding the balance between the two. Out of a light, you need to be aware that you are being active and you need to be aware that you're being inactive. Okay, the awareness should not go, but you needn't be active all the time. That, in fact, is driving you further towards agitation, right? The more active you are, the more agitated you become.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the sense of balance, then you become more agitated and you're trying to just keep going on. You're acting out of compulsions rather than out of a sense of light or balance.
Yeah. I mean, this is really interesting. I feel like the first thing I thought about actually when you were talking about inactivity, and I think this is maybe where, you know, the quote unquote occult sciences actually has, you know, a lot of resonance with modern thinking and modern theory. It's because when you were talking about, you know, why is our generation or why is our current lifestyle so judgmental of inactivity, or what is, you know, this, you know, me and my first thought was, this is the because of capitalism, you know, this is because of our economic structures, this is because, you know, we live in a world where you know, having, being extremely productive and having tangible outcomes and tangible outputs, these are all things that are considered successful.
Yeah.
And so obviously that is kind of the basis of capitalism as well, right? Is sort of how do you produce the most and how do you be the most efficient? And so my thinking was, you know, actually, are we judgmental of inactivity because of the fact that we live in a highly capitalistic world where, you know, being the most productive is kind of seen. And obviously that's our economic structure, but the way our economic structure is, of course, influences the way we think and the way we see the world and our cognitive structures as well. But I think what you're drawing attention to is actually really interesting, because there is maybe an overlap already between these, you know, more quote unquote modern theories of things like capitalism and sort of spiritual ways of being, because if there's already a category for inactivity or something like that, maybe there is actually some resonances between these two types of theory. I mean, what do you think?
So if I were to understand what you said, you're right in the sense that the economic structure influences the morals and ideals of each age. And see, you're right. And capitalism definitely does push you towards being productive all the time. I think that is a given. Okay. And right from GDP, everything is in terms of measurement. I mean, even academia, you've seen is how many papers have you published? What is the impact factor of those journals? Okay. Even in a knowledge domain, it has become very measurement based and productivity based. And what are we producing all this for? I mean, maybe we should question the more fundamentals of how this has come about. Inactivity has its role. Like, for example, lack of sleep brings down our capacity to act, right, in the next day. If we sleep very little, there's no point. We won't be able to work the next day. We can't be productive. Right. So we hear horror stories of Goldman Sachs and all, where the interns complain they were sleeping 5 hours. It shouldn't be a badge of honor that you're working something like 90 plus hours a week.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That is not a badge of honor. That is insanity. I mean, that's okay. I guess my personal views are coming in here, but there is something a little crazy about 95 hours a week being a badge of honor. I don't know. I mean, I'm making a moral judgment here. It's not neutral. But it doesn't quite feel right. I mean, see, the problem is then they feel entitled to those who to comment on those who've not been successful, saying that they're not hard workers. Not necessarily the case, right? I think each effort, there's a limitations on how much effort you can put in. Physical effort, no way a person can put in 95 hours of intense physical effort. Okay.
Totally, yeah. And,
I don't know. We have become a lot more productivity obsessed, but what is the idea then of what a society is? Multiple ideas. I mean, the problem is it's maybe we have to relook at it, and that's what's happening. A lot of people are going, there are many not mainstream alternatives to living a conventional lifestyle. There is some rising consciousness on climate change. How much do we really need? I mean, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I'm calling on Gandhiji, okay? I'm saying that, you know, he says that there is enough in this earth for every man's need, but there's not enough for even one man's greed.
Yeah.
And how much do we really need? I don't know. I mean, these are questions we should definitely ask. Fill out different notes. But coming back to the occult sciences, right? Occult sciences can be a guide. Okay, we have palmistry, numerology, you have tarot, you have astrology, of course. Okay, there are astrology's got a variety of things, right? I see only one. Astrology's got five different varieties in Indian astrology. I see only one, which is called the birth horoscope. Okay, so individualized karma, if you will. Okay, but there is karma of what you do of a particular time. There is karma of asking a question and then receiving an answer. Not karma, a horoscope of doing that. Okay, so there are other types of astrology used for different situations, etc. Okay, but why they're called occultists, they have been ignored, right? See, when we went into productivity systems, we began to look at tangible realities, the only reality, right? And these sciences are not systematized in that sense. They are variable. Astrology cannot accurately predict the future. No matter what, it cannot give systematic, accurate predictions all the time.
Right. Okay.
Because we do have power to change our destiny. Okay. It is like a record, if you will, of what the planets were at our birth time. But we have the power to change across our destiny as well. Within certain limitations, of course, but we do have the power to change our destiny as well. Okay, it's a clash. There are some things we can change, some things which we can't change. And it's up to us to, you know, strive and see what we can do. Spirituality does not mean inaction. Spirituality does not mean laziness. It means drawing a balance between activity and inactivity. Okay. Mm-hmm. And in some gurus go on further to say that you should be capable of seeing action in inaction and inaction in action. Sometimes we just are purely driven by the circumstance and the time of the age, right? I mean, right. You don't know. It just happens like that. I mean, you spoke about being in a flux and flowing. That is simply the function of this age and the interactions you're living in. Right. So definitely right. That is there. So I guess it can't be that simple. Spirituality is not simple. It can be made simple, but it need not be simple also. It's as complex as the most complex thing and as simple as the simplest thing, I guess.
So that's really fascinating. And I think from, like you said, because there's just so much rife in the world and things continue to feel like they're kind of going downhill, both in a society level, but also a more global level. Mm-hmm. I think, like you said, having a sense of agency or having a sense of control over your destiny is something that might be really important for us when we feel like the the world around us is kind of burning down. So I like this idea of, you can change your destiny and you can take control back into your life when it often feels like we're controlless. So
I think the key is to be in the right motivation, right? You should see the balance of both. I mean, for example, I will take my precautions against corona. Okay, I will wear a mask. I will take the vaccine. I will wash my hands. Okay, broadly, the precautions. But I cannot control corona coming into my life.
Right.
I will take precaution, but my duty is to take precaution. But the outcome may not be favorable. Okay, right. So the control lies in the extent that I can do my duty, but the outcome is not in my control.
Right, absolutely. You basically do what you can, right? Which is,
yeah.
And you leave the rest, which, you know, I think that's something we all have heard so many times in our lives and yeah, growing up.
It does work out that way, right? I mean, we have to give in our effort. See, the key is to be aware of what, I mean, I think therapy and all does have a role because we are a lot more used to outcomes in our own way, right? We are a very outcome-driven people at this point in time. It's not
capitalism.
Like, you're right. Capitalism is true. We are at the, maybe the pinnacle of capitalism at this point in time. I don't know how things will be even 20 years later. Okay.
Right.
I don't know, but definitely we do rely a lot on the goods and services that we've received. But if you noticed, there are certain limitations, right? I mean, 50 years ago, people dreamt that by 2020, we would be going around in flying cars, if you will. Okay.
Right. True. Yeah.
Okay. But that didn't happen. We were not able to get enough fuel or whatever. We were not able to do it. All of our developments now are more interactional, right? I can communicate with you through so many different mediums. I mean, you're at one, you are at in the UK, I mean, India, and we still are able to connect. So our connectivity has improved, but in terms of physical infrastructure, things haven't changed as much, right? I mean, we still go around in personal or public conveyance, okay, which is still land-based. So the direction of technology and of progress has changed, if you will. There's a lot more social awareness of communities which were relatively underprivileged in the older system. I mean, we see better rising of LGBTQ rights. We see better Dalit rights. So definitely there is more social uprising and awareness of the importance of all human beings. Okay, so in that sense, it's a positive development. Okay, but we'll have to see. I don't know. It is maybe it needs more energy or it needs to be channelized in the right way. There's a lot of good, but maybe since you're not channelizing it, we are getting into conflicts all over the place.
Yes, that's it is. We do live in very tenuous and uncertain times. So yeah, absolutely. Finding the right channels, finding the right outlets, finding the right groups of people who understand us, I think is probably more important than ever now. So
Okay, what are your thoughts on, we were discussing psychology in the occult sciences, right? And the question I would ask is, are we a distinctive people? Are we really outside our environment? See, it appears as though we are this like this unique person, okay, with a unique identity within our body, okay?
Right.
Are we really that? Okay, like you've had so many science studies showing the correlation between weather and decision making. Okay, like cold weather makes you put you in a bad mood. Okay, though there's no correlation. But we are a lot more sensitive to the surroundings around us, the people around us, the hidden forces around us, if you will. Okay, even planetary movements. But just that it's not recognized in mainstream science. And that's where India, with its tradition of occult sciences, has a lot more. So I spoke about the numbers earlier, right? Which resonate, etc. I think nature does give messages to us. Okay, it's a question of how we interpret them and act. Astrology is just one way of looking at nature's messages to us. Our palm might be another way. Numerology is another way. So it's trying to interpret the message of nature. We've had shamans, right, in China and all. We spoke of how they would, I think, sacrifice a lamb and see its bones and see for the pattern of predicting the future. I mean, they believed that that was a way of seeing nature's patterns. Okay. I don't know. I mean, is there an absolute way of doing it? I don't think so. I mean, I think it has to be seen in its context. Every individual will interpret a message in their own way.
Right.
Even more fundamentally, see, you and I are having this conversation. How we interpret each other is a very subjective reality to each of us, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I would look at all of these sciences as, I mean, the occult sciences as something of trying to read nature's message, not necessarily using the rational output. For example, when you come with astrological charts, right, or the significance of numerological numbers, they come up with these sort of concepts about what each number means or what each planet means, and there's no rational way of understanding those concepts or explaining those concepts. I mean, why would a planet like Jupiter have this property? Why should it have a property? Okay, but it has that property. So I'm saying maybe there is something unknown to us at this point in time. I don't know. So I'm saying, let me not throw away the belief of my ancestors completely until I understand their context.
Mm-mm.
And I've not understood that. I don't want to call them as fools or ignoramuses or primitive tribes just reciting something out of nowhere. They do seem to have had their knowledge, which might not be the straightforward, systematized, standardized knowledge that we have now.
Completely. Something a little more intangible or...
A lot more intangible.
Yeah, something that doesn't really, you know, follow this, like you said, the systematized process. I think this question of being connected to nature, I think it also comes up in psychoanalysis quite a bit. So, again, you know, if this conversation, we're kind of tracing different resonances between different modalities of thought, I would say this question of the individual being connected to nature is something that comes up in psychoanalysis. But more so, I guess, the question of our unconscious, which we often think is very individual and very personal or very to sort of married to our own experiences and our own history. But I think within psychoanalysis, there's always this idea that the unconscious is always connected to something larger than us. It's always connected to history, to collective catastrophe, to politics through the economic system. So even this idea that the things we find to be so deeply intimate and so deeply personal and who we are fundamentally to the core is actually connected to history or the economic system or our social system or anything like that is kind of another way of saying that the individual is connected to something larger than itself, patterns larger than itself. So I think that notion is resonant throughout different kind of modalities of thought as well.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe the occult sciences do have to come up. Man, they do give us guidance on how to connect with these hidden conscious or subconscious tendencies within us. I mean, they're not mainstream, but they do have a role to play. And maybe we need them to become mainstream again, possibly.
Yeah, I think they are actually. This is a kind of an aside, but there's the app called CoStar. I don't know if you've heard of it.
But oh, no.
It's a really famous app that a lot of people use, and it's about astrology, and you put all your details in it, and it kind of, it's not the, I would say like your notion of astrology is way more deep, way more intricate, and way more nuanced. But this very rudimentary understanding of astrology is in this app called CoStar, where lots of people are actually really interested in it and use it. It's got like millions of users. But I guess somehow, because I think it's quite mainstream, it's probably way more diluted than a more rigorous understanding of CoStar. So I think, you know, if at the end we can say that people are still looking, people are still searching for that modality or that framework that really resonates with them and can help them navigate through life, right?
Because
it's fundamentally what all of this is about. How do we navigate through this crazy thing we call life?
They are good guides. I mean, we do have different guides, and it's up to us to figure it out. Okay. Anjana, thanks. It was a great session. I think we've spoken a lot of topics. And everyone in the audience, and hope you enjoyed this session. And it was a nice, knowledgeable session for me as well. I mean, I learned a lot from Anjana's perspectives and the role in which a productive capitalism has influenced us. I mean, that is true. I mean, if I were to take a Marxist stance, the production does influence the social interactions within society.
Definitely.
So that definitely is there. So, yeah. Thanks a lot, Anjana, for giving
I should be thanking you. You're the one who knows all these very interesting things. And I'm so glad that your viewers, or I should say your listeners, have this, because you have so much to offer and it's a treat for us. So thanks, Anirudh.
Okay, Anjana. Thank you.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.